during your actual visit to India. But for those of us who have been very engrossed in you know, a lot of professional work, a lot of intellectual activity, things that distract us from the constant meditation, I was wondering if you have any advice as to how to make it really stick. In other words, in meditation, the experience of formlessness, expansiveness is there, but when one goes out of meditation, then it doesn't really stick. So I just appreciate your insights and, you know, just your own experiences in that regard and any advice you may have.
I would say meditation is not separate from you. You and meditation are one. So there's no like going and sitting down to meditate unless you're separating that I'm a separate meditator meditating. In reality, all of the experience that seems to be appearing is appearing within the meditation. You are that. You are formless. All these activities that you see with form are occurring within you. You're a formless holder of the body. When you see out of these eyes, you think that it's this limited body form that's seeing, but it's presence. It's that just I without anything. And as you mentioned in Nashik, one of the things was, see, the conviction was there because Maharaj was that presence. That presence had already started to be felt. And now Maharaj was that presence. God, if you were. So I traveled to India to see God. And God said, this mantra will erase the illusion slowly, silently, and permanently. And I began in that very moment that Maharaj placed his hand on my head. I began mantra, and then mantra began running by itself because you're not separate from meditation. That I think is a big key. When I'm pretending that I'm a separate entity meditating, then I'm creating this concept of separation where none actually exists. You are that. It's not like you're Jay trying to become that. You are that that has appeared and know yourself through this concept of Jay. And now this concept of Jay is no longer needed because you can know yourself in a real sense. Like you said, there's sitting in meditation, there's a feeling of expansiveness, that presence, that formless wonder, whatever you want to call it, that you are. And now that you've kind of touched yourself in a real sense, you carry that with you. And yeah, I have a job. I do a job 40 hours a week. And then I do another thing that I do that probably takes another 20 so hours a week of my time, but there's no deed, no doer. It's just scenes appearing and disappearing before, and whatever seems to be occurring is occurring, just like here. Prior to this, I was looking at an ad that they sent me to sign up for some TV service. So I'm looking at that. Then it pops up. Oh, time for the meeting. Boom, here we are in the meeting. There's no separation of meditation. It's just a constant flow. These things are appearing and disappearing, and you're not.
May I just ask another question? I know others have questions, and so I don't want to take up everyone's time, but I Nisargadatta mentioned something. He mentioned that there was a slow ripening process that occurs. I guess as Ramakant would describe as the absorption of knowledge, but then there would be a sudden irreversible change at the time of realization. So has your experience been just that, a sudden irreversible process, or do you feel that you have at least in the early stages, that you have to constantly make a conscious effort to be in touch with selfless self. In other words, it was a slow process of absorption whereby you had to consciously attempt to, I guess for lack of a better way of expressing it, you have to be in touch with your selfless self deliberately. And after a while, after many, many exposures to selfless self, then you become one with that, and it becomes permanently established.
There's, I think, Nisargadatta Maharaj talks about chewing on the chocolate, that I am, that sense of existence, the just I, the selfless self, presence, chewing on that. And when I say chewing on that, and when Nisargadatta Maharaj says chewing on the chocolate, it's like a cow chews its cud, he talks about. And what that is it's just, okay, so that I am that. I know this. I feel this subtle sense of presence, this I am, this just I. And I just remain in that. When things appear to be happening in the outside world, I don't let my attention go off to that. I like to remain with my selfless self. Because truly it's become selfless self-intoxication. You know, you're with this subtle, just absolute, I think they call it Satchidananda, you know, existence, consciousness, bliss. You're in a state that is just witnessing this you can't describe. And in India, I guess there was just this, because Master said, okay, I give you this mantra, this is the lineage mantra. I sat for about an hour with some of the people that were there at the ashram with me, and we did a, quote, formal meditation. And then after I ceased my formal meditation, I continued with mantra, and I went to my room. And the next thing I know, I'm walking around India. I went and I had my beard shaved off and my hair cut and all this sort of stuff. And it was just a flowing. It then became, it was like mantra somehow took a remote control, and the John, whatever was there of John, didn't fight it. And so I guess you could say the ripening was not to struggle and not to fight, just to, you know, if you see your body walking off in one direction, okay, let's walk in this direction. And see where it's happening. And then just be with your selfless self. You're seeing, you're experiencing, but you're not taking it in as a person. It's just scenes. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not trying to personify it and say, I am seeing this, or where are we going, or anything like that. There was nothing like this. And in the same thing, again, I'll say I was very blessed because of the food poisoning. That was amazing. And also remaining with the self. See, at the food poisoning, I could have been like, oh my God, I'm so sick. This is so terrible. I want to go home. But instead, as Maharaj says, it's an opportunity to know yourself in a real sense. And I was very honest with Maharaj the first time I went to go to a jewelry store. That sense of egoistic, oh my God, look at all this gold. I want this gold. And I felt very restless about it. But I went right back to Master and I said, Master, I don't know what came over me. I was sitting there, I was looking at the gold, and it was like something was bubbling in me. And then we talked about it. I remained with mantra. Maharaj says, don't worry when these things bubble up. I also got very angry one day about the food, that it was totally just all vegetable, everything. Of course, everything was vegetable every day. But this one day, ego decided, really, I want to complain about this thing. And so I went and I told Maharaj again and said, you know, this is happening. And it subsided. And then I was happy to say that the next time I went to the jewelry store with another devotee, and his eyes were very big about getting gold for his family, I was completely at rest. I sat on the stool with Tata and we shared, they serve you chai while you're looking at the gold. And I just drank my chai and no disturbance, because you don't pay attention to the disturbances. You don't get wrapped up in the food poisoning. You don't get wrapped up in every little feeling or every little sort of semi-problem that seems to be appearing. Master says you are Brahman, live like Brahman. Live like Brahman is just die, just die. All of this is appearing within my spontaneous presence. It's projection. And I have nothing to do with this illusory world.
Thanks, John. I appreciate it. I you know, in the past, I had some hesitation in terms of joining a Sangha group because Maharaj gave sort of conflicting advice. He said, don't share your spiritual experiences. But on the other hand, he would just say, if you realize, make others realize. So I come to feel that you're doing just that. So yeah, this is much appreciated.
A girl.
So that means one has to try to identify who is one in the real sense. That, you know, would show like what is right action. That would, so how to react for the events in the day-to-day life.
In the beginning, it's meditation. Then meditation. Now, if once that subtle sense of presence, that selfless self, the I am, just I, you remain there. And then continue about your daily activities. And remember, Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj says he remained with the I am, and then he went about and he had his tobacco shop and all that sort of stuff. But every moment that he could spare, he was just sitting with that I am. And then he said, within a short time, I realized my true nature. My true nature is I am presence. I am formless. I am that. You are that. And that is all there is. See, it's not I'm that and I'm also this. No, there's only that and you are that.
Here are a couple of questions. One is, this sense of presence you are pointing at, so it's very my own being. So this is being felt when the experiences, you know, are ceasing. All the experiences, in the sense, there is no thinking. There is no attending of any senses. Then there is awareness, just pure awareness or beingness, but it's for just for very short span. Again, something comes and bombarded. So again, yes. So this is subdued. You know, this nature is oblivious. So how to increase, you know, span of this thing, and other thing, how to recognize that I is this presence. Not the experience, not the body or any other thing. How to recognize, you know, how to, you know, this I sense, you know, rather than identifying with the body, mind, how can it can be, you know, see that this I am is me. So how can layers. This is, yeah.
The illusory layers. What you're saying is that sometimes you feel this just I. Like Nisargadatta Maharaj has said too, when you wake up in the morning, and Sri Ramakant Maharaj says, you wake up in the morning and it's totally blank. And then you're here in the world doing all your things. But in that brief moment of awakening, it's just I, kind of a fuzzy just I, no concepts, no anything. I am just the same, presence, just the same. What you're saying is, I only have it in short time. Well, that's because you're still believing that these illusory layers that are covering presence need your attention more than your own presence does. This is not true. And that's why Maharaj gives mantra slowly, silently, and permanently to erase the illusory concepts. The example is used of fire and ash. And the fire, presence, is burning all the time. It's always there. It never goes anywhere. And it can only be felt because this body form, okay, you have a body to feel this presence, but it's always there. It's the background of every experience. So now it's covered. Yes? And it's not really covered. It's just the illusory layers of, because I know myself for the first time in this body form, I look around and I say, I'm a body and there are objects. I'm an object and there are other objects. And I start to get memories and such from this wrong perspective. As Maharaj talks about, the wrong files, the virus. So these are erased slowly, silently, and permanently. And then presence, the selfless self, the I am that, who I am, is burning brightly underneath. The fire is there. You have to remove the ash. The ash is all the illusory layers that appear to be covering presence, but they're not covering. So when you say, how can I know that I am presence? Presence is all there is. And how do you know this? You just, if you're not body and you're not mind, and you remove everything, there's something that cannot be removed, which is formlessness, and just presence. Presence is formless. That's why it can't be separated. It appears that it's separated because of this body and that body. You could look at it the same as if it was like intelligent air. I breathe in the air, now it's in my body. I breathe out the air, now it's, quote, available to all of everything. You breathe in this same air, now it's your air. But it's not your air or my air, it's simply air. And presence is just like space or sky. It's just space. The space that's in a small bottle or jar, when that jar breaks, the space that was inside the jar is the same that is outside the jar. There's just no longer the illusory concept of being separated by a jar.
Okay, so I got it. So these illusionary layers, so because of that, the recognition that I am, so that I am that presence is not coming. So that has to be gone completely. That's what you're saying.
The cultivation of presence, the cultivation of presence, remaining with yourself as self, be with you always. And like we said before, always is not except for when I'm at work, or except for when I'm with my wife and kids, or except for when I'm stuck in traffic. Always is always. It's not a part-time spirituality, like Maharaj says. It's definitely a full-time job. So when this presence reflects in mind, and that's done by a mantra, okay, mantra. And the illusory layer slowly, silently, and permanently. Now, presence reflects in an empty mind, as we talked about, like a magnifying glass that burns away an ant. All the thoughts that are coming in between, these flow of thoughts, are burned away because you're concentrated on presence. Presence is like a blank. It just, because when you're concentrated on presence, your attention's not going out to all the illusory things. And that's why Maharaj says selfless self-intoxication. When you remain with your selfless self, nothing can take your attention. You can open your eyes and still be remaining with your selfless self. And you're seeing through that presence, knowing it's just, all this is just appearing.
I'd like to say something about Jay's question.
Okay.
He asked, do you have to do it deliberately? And for me, I've never really been able to deliberately produce a sense of selflessness or bliss or whatever you want to call it. But I'd like to read. I do these daily contemplations, and it helps me. I don't know if it will help anybody else, but the way a really interesting question came to me today, and it sort of helped me recognize that there is no, well, could I read this paragraph that I wrote down?
Do as you like, free country.
And and see if anybody else connects with this. The question was, how can you tell the difference between bliss and not bliss? Because sometimes I do get the recognition of open presence, and then sometimes I don't feel it, and then I compare the two, and as soon as I start comparing, the difference between bliss and not bliss is when so to answer that question was, how can you tell the difference between bliss and not bliss? The answer that came to me was, bliss has no I. And then this can be this can be frustrating to me. But so then I said to myself, so just forget it. There's forget it and be the selfless self. So then I wrote, so easy to turn away from bliss without knowing it. Bliss doesn't know itself. We want good feelings and good knowings and comfort, but these all know their own sense and self and being, all these senses of like sense of good, sense of knowing, sense of comfort. But they are limited because they pass, because of course they change and pass. These things don't have, these experiences don't have their own self, but they are, these experiences don't serve, they sort of perpetuate their own sense of self, but they're actually experiences there to serve what is not one of the experiences. And they serve, the way I look at it was, they serve self with self. They don't serve each other, although it seems like one serves the other. Well, I'm kind of getting away from what I wrote, but then I wrote, all interests have inherent bias, and our self-interest, thus they are doomed to change, but bliss is itself. You know it when you are it. So basically that's what I wrote.
Yeah, bliss is not an attribute. Bliss is that you are, that Satchitananda. That's what's felt through the body. As far as when you can tune into it, any given moment, right now, you can use your body and be with yourself. No thought, nothing, just bliss. But it's not you experiencing bliss. It's bliss because there's the removal of anything and everything that's covering that.
Right.
So you're, and all of us are that. So you have the ability to use this body at any given time, instantaneously. You could say that you're causing it, and then you say, oh, well, you know, if you're not body, how do you do this? Well, because you're eliminating this concept of body by remaining with your selfless self in the moment. And that's where this body instrument comes in handy, because you could use it to dip as a cup into the nectar of immortality and be here. Like, just take a moment. Eyes closed. and just sort of almost like do a backflip into yourself. And that, there's no thought, no thought of anything. There's no, there's nothing. There's just a subtle, subtle, subtle sense. You just remain there, but now you open your eyes, but you still remain there. And there's no room for thought. There's no thinking. There's no identification. You're absolutely right. When you have self-interest, it's because there's a self there that has an interest. And if there's a self there that has an interest, then mind, ego, intellect are running the show rather than formlessness and presence running the body without any kind of extra co-pilot. You're just here. And here, there's no contemplating. There's no ability to contemplate. There's nothing that you can grasp onto. You're just here. And even the pressure of being in a body is loosened because you're paying attention to that you are. You're remaining with your selfless self. Be with you always. And this cannot be removed. It's not an experience. The only reason you're having an experience is because the concept of duality is there with having a body. So because you're having access to this body form, you can know yourself in a real sense. That's why Maharaj calls the body a golden opportunity. Because it's like, without this body, of course you're there, but you have no way of knowing you're there. Now that you have a body, you know you are. Like you can't be with your selfless self when you are your selfless self. You can only be with your selfless self through the concept of duality and the use of this body instrument. And now you can just, in any moment, you just, and okay, you could say it takes practice. And perhaps, maybe, you know, like Maharaj talks about, remaining with your selfless self, spend some time with you. These moments where you're sitting and just, oh yes. And there's no thought, it's just presence, just pure. And as I sit in meditation and I just bask in this presence, then I can open my eyes and go out into the so-called world that I know is appearing in presence and do my job, do my duties, and yet remain there. And anytime I get a little bit lost, look at this long line that I'm waiting for my lunch. Oh, let me just be with me, be with myself. So then all of a sudden time stops because I'm outside of time. Before I know it, I've got my lunch. Then I'm with myself the self while I'm eating my lunch. I just remain there. Nothing can take me away from my selfless self. And it's practice. Remain with your selfless self through everything. Something seems very disturbing, remain with your selfless self. As I spoke about food poisoning, that was pretty disturbing, you know, for the body. It was a fairly trauma type experience for the body. But remaining with the selfless self, there was no experience, no experiencer. Was so beautiful, and I feel so blessed to have gone through that experience, having been given mantra, because there was no like, oh my God, what's happening? This no, remain with the selfless self. And also going into the bathroom and having freezing cold water or scalding hot water and remaining with my selfless self, not allowing my mind to be bothered or complain, remaining with my selfless self. And shower was taken. And then early in, see, the other thing that was nice is at the ashram, there was no chance you're complaining. Like I would have felt like a very small something had I gone in and complained about anything. You know, Tata is there. He sweeps the floor every morning just before the kakadarate. And you can't come into him and say, oh my God, the water was so, no, because this is ruining the moment. As soon as you walk into the ashram, it's reverential. So you bow to yourself and say, oh, there's no complaining. It's just, it's just beautiful. And knowing that all the experiences, as I spoke to another devotee, I said, you know, this is like a, it's almost like a playground for selfless self. Everything that's happening within this ashram is for you to remain with your selfless self. Consider it like a small world where we can really, really, really practice before we go out into the quote, other world, the bigger world, whatever. And you could see that. And it's the same here. Here we are in our little small world having this little satsang, these little talks. And now when this is off, okay, now I remain with myself as self. How I just remain. I do the dishes, I remain with myself as self. Call a friend, I remain with myself as self. Because you are that.
I think you have the more to... you...
Yes?
I think the more you remain with yourself as self, the, you know, when you step out into the big world, kind of.
Little world.
You know, like it's, you begin to perceive everything as selfless self. In other words, Vinaya Maharaj would say, you know, except there's no master, there's no disciple, there's no God, there's no Paramatman, there's no Brahman. All there is selfless self. And the more, I think the more accustomed we, or through practice, the more we learn to actually experience that presence, we begin to recognize it present in everything all around us. And so the perspective of things changes, you know, you begin to see things as selfless self, or as Ranjit would say, everything is he,
yes.
Meaning reality. And that takes the edge off as well, kind of, you know, experiences and things that you don't really want to go through sometimes.
Absolutely.
And I guess the mantra helps eliminate, it stops the constant comparisons and the constant interests, and it draws focus away from that. It's sort of like doing something deliberate, but it's actually you're getting out of the way rather than putting something there.
Correct. And that's why Maharaj says, you know, like I think a lady talked about Vipassana meditation or something like that. He said, yes, that's a good like pain relief or painkiller. But meditation with mantra removes these things without having to gather new concepts. You're removing concepts without any new concepts other than mantra. And then, as Maharaj says, in the end, mantra is also discarded.
So mostly, when I do mantra, I'm not thinking of it, the mantra as a concept. It's just, I'm just saying it. You
know. Correct. Well, you'd be hearing it. Yeah. You don't even have to say it anymore because now you've been doing it long, long time. So now you should be able to just sit and listen to the mantra running naturally without anyone actually doing the mantra. You're listening to the mantra as it's running naturally through the body.
Does it happen, sir? Like the breath becomes one with the mantra.
The breath is the mantra. So it's continuous. Maharaj talks about when you go to sleep, it continues all the way through until you're waking up in the next morning. Because it's, you're one with that mantra. There's nothing else that's separating you. You're one with that mantra. And then you realize, okay, now this mantra, because as Maharaj says, prior to being this, you weren't given a mantra. When you came into this world, did anybody say, okay, now you haven't? No, because you had no mantra because you're one with that mantra. This mantra is to erase all these you know, suddenly I know myself, and I know myself wrongly as a body, and I start to get memories and experiences of the body and assuming they're my experiences, which is incorrect, and that I'm living a life, which is also incorrect, and these have to be erased slowly, silently, permanently. The concept of birth and death are erased. And then mantra is just natural, because you could say, anytime you're not with your selfless self, you may do mantra to get back with your selfless self, because you and the mantra are one.
Keith, you know, as you read J. Krishnamurti, right, he says, whatever you experience, it's like past, and
it will pass. Yeah.
Yeah. So you can't go to your, you know, original nature by using anything past or other than yourself. But I don't know, like that kind of teaching, you know, would work out when one is divided of all the concepts. So all the concepts means like whatever you experience, whatever you undergone, everything, you know, whatever is happening. So you have to look yourself beyond all those things. Then only, yes, you know, that choiceless awareness work out. What I would like to say...
Oh, go ahead.
What I would like to say is, you know, like as Mara says, right, like this is like a one, you know, thorn. You know, we used to take out the rest of the thorns. Then we'll throw out. So like that, there are many thoughts will come, many experience will come. So rather than wavering among many experiences, now there is only one experience, that is mantra. So then you discard that also. That is much easier than directly trying to discarding everything and recognizing you are that you are. No? Sorry, sorry. I'm not trying to preach.
No, that's all good. I would just say that whether you like, whatever teacher you like, always remember this. What they're saying in their own way is accept your selfless self. There is no God, no Brahman, no Paramatman, no master. Nothing is there. All of these masters have had that direct experience and are now, I just had a text with somebody today about that, are now trying to share or share this experience basically using words. And words are inadequate because you're prior to words, but these masters are having this direct experience. And then they say, okay, so if you remove everything, you're there. Well, why? Because you're formless presence and all this is appearing on presence. And everything then, if you are formless, then you cannot be a form. Well, if you are not a form, then there cannot be the sense of doership. The sense of doership is because you wrongly believe that you are a form. None of this has ever happened because you are formless now. You are formless, even though this experience of form is appearing, and you will be formless after this experience of form has dissolved or disappeared. You are that. And accept your selfless self. There's no God, no Brahman, no Paramatman, no master, nothing is there. Something has appeared in nothing for a time and will dissolve back into nothing. Nothing, formlessness, attribute without attributes, is all there is. And all of these attributes or forms that are appearing are just appearances. You never were Rami. When Rami's body falls, it means nothing for you. Now, to the other bodies that believe their bodies, they'll see Rami and say, oh, it's very sad. Rami, I knew Rami. He was a good guy and, you know, this and that. But the truth is, you never were Rami. You never were John. We'll use me instead. I hate to like wish death on my friend Rami here. So we say, John, there never was a John. Formless, the space in the room identified and knew itself as alive through this form of John. And when this form of John is no longer there, the space is still there. We talked about, you look in the mirror as a young boy, the same presence in this body is looking and seeing the young boy, the middle-aged man, the old man, and then the guy on his deathbed. It's the same presence, and it's not aging. It's not dying. It cannot die. Body dissolves, basically, because it's a five elemental creation created by the five elements. Mom and dad got together, made some goo. That goo ate and grew. And you thought you're the goo, but you're not the goo. You're formless. And I know that we're pressed for the time because you all are heading out at 8 o'clock for your other obligation.
Yes.
So very great.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Kate.
Thank you, John.